Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us, as always. As you're listening, we can still take your questions for the mayor. You can get those in during the show by emailing ask@wbaa.org. Mayor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Emily. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We were talking about this a little bit before the show started. I wanted to get an update. How is everything proceeding with the 9th and Kossuth Street projects? We talked about this a little bit last month as well. How are things going? Is it on track to be completed on schedule? What's the latest?
Well, I'd say that it might be just a little bit behind. I haven't actually checked with anybody in the last few days, but as you know, we've had lots of rain here lately. So my thought would be, with some of the other things that we're doing, that it would be just maybe a little bit behind, but not too much. And we've got the detours worked out and some things with the buses. So I haven't received any phone calls from anybody in a couple weeks now with any problems or any issues. So I'm hoping that that's a good sign, because we are very excited about getting that done. You know, it's going to be brick pavers when it's done there in the intersection, and it's going to help with the drainage, and we're going to have fiber to that traffic signal and that traffic cabinet there. And then there are some big, you know, plans that I can't disclose right now, but for the building right beside the intersection, and this will help with the drainage issues that they've been getting inside that building, and allow us to do some other things with some neat streetscape opportunities. And
okay.
So we're excited about you know, what that'll mean when it's done. Like I said, could be run over a few days because of the rain, but we'll just have to see how the weather goes from here.
And Mayor, remind us, and for people who have to drive through that part of town, for planning purposes, when should people be thinking approximately when that might be wrapped up, when they can drive right through there?
Oh, I would say, what's today, the 14th? Mm-hmm. I mean, probably around the end of the first week in November would probably be a good thing to start keeping an eye on, or certainly that first week in November to really be paying attention for updates and stuff. Because if the weather holds and we can keep moving on it, I would hope we'd get it wrapped up by then.
Okay. So you presented Lafayette's city budget at the October 4th City Council meeting. I wanted to talk about that today. You focused on a few things. The first one of which was salary increases for city employees. After getting, I believe you said, a 1% raise last year, city employees are going to get a 5% raise this year. And then members of the police and fire department would be getting a 3% raise, which you pointed out is 1% above what's in their contract. You also underlined that follows a significant raise for them last year. Can you talk about the decision-making process there as you were looking at how much to increase salaries this year?
Sure. Well, you know, obviously we wanted to do as much as we could to try to make up for that 1% raise, which was obviously not very much the year before, as we all were working through COVID and there were uncertainties in how, you know, tax collections would go. There were certainly uncertainties when it came to COET and EDIT dollars, and even types of miscellaneous revenue that the city takes in from other activities. And so we were cautious about that, and to make sure that we all got through that. Fortunately, that year, we didn't have any increase to our health insurance, which made a big difference for people to be able to really, even though the raise was small, it wasn't just ate up by a health care increase. And so when we looked at this year, you know, 5% was about the most that we thought we could do. I mean, obviously there is still some uncertainty out there. Things have gone well, and they're going probably even better than some people thought. But as you know, that the revenue replacement didn't end up working out for communities like everybody initially thought they were. So just for your listeners, just real quick, originally we thought if we had revenue that needed to be replaced in individual departments, that we would be able to replace that revenue, like in motor vehicle highway, where we took a significant hit and in the Parks Department where we took significant hits, that we'd be able to replace that. But at the end of the day, the decision was made by the federal government that if your overall revenue was above the previous year, then you couldn't replace any revenue. So we were, and our revenue was, as you know, all three entities, Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Tippecanoe New County, had passed the public safety lit the prior year for our police and fire departments. So our overall revenue was above the previous year, which meant we, even though we lost, you know, between those two departments well over $1 million, we weren't able to replace that. So we needed to be cautious because of that. And then also we know that, you know, because of the chip situation in the community, places like SIA hasn't worked as many hours and certainly not working overtime, and it's affected other businesses and then also suppliers to those businesses. So we wanted to be cautious on how that might affect particularly Edit, you know, down the road, maybe not even so much this year, but even the next year. And so when we looked at all of that, you know, we were able to come up, we thought a 5% was what we could do. And that also with the 1% last year kind of averaged out to 3% for the 2 years. And we were able to, again, the city of Lafayette is part of the AIM Medical Trust. So we buy our insurance with about 40 some other Indiana cities. So we have a large group. We have a lot of buying power. So fortunately this year we had zero increase in our health care also. And so we didn't have to pass any portion of that along to our employees again. And so that 5% raise and what they got last year is really going to feel like a raise because it's not going to be taken up by increased health care costs. So we were certainly very pleased to be able to do that. I mean, obviously, we'd have liked to done a little bit more if we could have, but we felt that was fair. And as you mentioned, with the police department last year, you know, I negotiated 4-year contracts with the fire department union and with the Fraternal Order of Police. And part of those contracts were longevity pay, and that was the number one priority that both department had, was instituting longevity pay into the police and fire department salaries, along with what that would do to increase their pensions considerably when they got ready to retire. So we were able to fully implement longevity pay last year, along with increases to specialty pay within the police and fire departments, and those contracts passed unanimously. Well, because of that very, very large raise that they got last year, they had agreed to take a 2% raise this year as a guarantee, knowing that we had done everything possible to get longevity instituted the year before. I was able to go ahead and give them a 3% raise, which is a percent above what their contract had said we had to do, but I wanted to be able certainly to do that for the men and women of the police and fire departments that are out there protecting us every day and risking their lives. And so we balanced all of those items out as we were going through the decision-making process and reached those conclusions. And I'm happy we were able to get there, particularly with no, like I said, no increase to their health care costs. And we have very, very good health care insurance here. And so that's the way we reached that decision. And I think everybody is happy with where we ended up.
So as you're looking at, you know, the money the city has, and you mentioned this, and we talked about this on last month's show as well, the concerns about the chip shortages. And when you raised that point again to the city council, I mean, you did mention that Subaru, which is obviously very impacted by this, sounds like they're starting to ramp the length of their production days back up, you know, again. And you just mentioned this. Are you able to speak to how, you know, to how this is impacting smaller businesses in the area that are also being impacted by this supply shortage?
Well, I think there's two pieces to that. One is because the chip shortage can affect Subaru, it can affect Caterpillar, it can affect other large employers. those large employers also then have tier one and tier two suppliers, which are, you know, smaller companies, and those companies have people that do things for them. So there really is a collateral effect, just like there is a collateral effect going up, you know, for every job. You know, kind of the national labor standards will tell you that for every job that you create in automotive, you create about seven to nine other positions in the economy. Everything from the people who have to come out to mow the grass, to the construction workers that continue to work, to the people that put on the finishes, to the tier one suppliers for parts and the kitting of the equipment for on-time inventory, and the logistics people, and you know, the list just goes on and on. Well, that same collateral effect happens going downward, right, when you have like a Subaru reduced production. As you said, they are starting to ramp back up. I think they're back up. I talked to the president of their and vice president of the company just about a week ago, and they're, you know, going back to 7-hour days now, and they are starting to do that ramp up. But you know, they were clear there's still a long way to go with the chip situation, and you know, this is better, but we're certainly not out of the woods by any stretch. And so all of that then, as you just indicated, spills down into smaller and smaller businesses and how they are impacted by what those people that work at those places can spend, disposable income that they have to spend at those other small businesses. And depending on what the businesses are outside of just the realm of the chip, there are certainly other global supply chain issues on different products lines. I mean, we were talking this morning here about some dump trucks that we really need, that we're going to need. And the last time that we checked, some of the dump trucks that we need may not be able to be ready till 2024. And so when you look at that and the supply chains, even in computer equipment, what used to take us a couple days to order certain data switches and things like that, we're waiting 3 to 4 weeks on now. So that all trickles down into small businesses also, not just the chip issue, but other supply chain issues and other parts that people are having difficulty in acquiring for different types of, all types of businesses around the globe. And so I think I mentioned it last time that, you know, in my mind, that's something we have to continue to watch very closely. That's the one thing that, you know, yes, what keeps me up at night, that those are the things there, because, you know, the economy, it's very important that we keep the economy going. And of course, we are able to do that so far, and we even have lots of jobs still available here in Tippecanoe County. But that supply chain is a global supply chain, and global logistics is a huge part of what keeps a lot of the economy going. And of course, and the part it keeps going trickles down into other parts also.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm Emily Seiberg, and right now we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. I did want to ask one more question from that budget meeting, Mayor. You mentioned, and it sounds like except for maybe a few positions in the police department, you don't plan to approve any new positions or maybe new classifications for positions that were requested by some department heads. I believe you said you would have to be the bad guy for a while. I just wanted to ask, you know, are these new positions, you know, are these more recent needs, or have some of these roles that people are requesting remained unfilled for a little while? What are we talking about there?
Yeah, it's a combination of those different things. Obviously, as you correctly indicated, we are going to fill the positions, the new positions in the police department. Public safety is our number one priority, and as you saw from following the budget process, I think it's $38 million of the $44 million of the general fund is all related to police and the fire department. So, a significant number of that budget, of the general fund budget, goes to those two organizations. The other positions were ones that people inquired about. There were some in the parks department. There was some, and most of them, I think four of them, were in the parks department. As you know, we finished Loeb Stadium, and we've finished the lagoon and Memorial Island, and there's lots of new activities, and the park is being used very, very well. There's lots and lots of people up there, so they had some requests in there. There were some other requests for classification changes, as you said, to move people from this classification up, which increases their pay and different things like that. And so, you know, I just told folks that my number one priority was getting everybody this 5% raise,
okay,
and making sure that we were able to do that and take care of the people that we have now and the people that, you know, fought through COVID with us and everything. And that, you know, I told them at the very beginning, and that's why I was kind of joking about being the bad guy, that that was going to be my priority and to be very careful about submitting for any new positions or classification changes. Well, I still got quite a few submissions. So I was joking about, you know, having to be the bad guy, but I told them what our priorities were and what my expectations were. I also had told them, as you probably know, that if tax collections are good and the collection rate is good, and we don't see any significant changes in EDIT, COIT, Public Safety Lit, you know, TIF dollars that we use, that I was taking a very conservative approach, that I would bring back some of those positions on an individual basis and appropriate the money, you know, transparently with the city council in public meetings. And I was, you know, willing to do that. But for now, they were not going to be included in the budget. And till we kind of get a better picture on what the economy is doing, if there are any significant changes. And I don't think there will be, but we certainly do want to be cautious about that. So everybody knows that those opportunities still exist, but they will be evaluated, you know, kind of on a monthly basis, on an individual basis, and they will be prioritized by need and scope of what it means to the community, and then we'll move forward that way.
So if people are coming to you and saying, you know, we would really like, you know, this position with these responsibilities, you're saying we can't do that right now. How do you work with departments to ensure that they're still able to function as they need to and get the job done?
Yeah, we continue to look at technology. We continue to look at cross training. We continue, which I'm very, very proud of, the work that departments do for each other, how much the water and wastewater will help the parks, how much the street department helps the parks, those types of things, how all the departments help each other. And by being able to do that and structuring our time and our priority of task, you know, we are able to do that. And quite frankly, you know, as the city has grown substantially, you know, we have hired new people, but it's probably not as much as some people think or as much as other places might do. We pride ourselves on being efficient. We have a you know, very good software programs which help us, and we're right now one of our software technicians that's just really, really good at also business processes is going through each department in the city doing efficiency studies and finding ways for us to do more with less and how we become more efficient through the use of technology and software programs and scheduling and how that we're able to do that. So we do expect a lot of our folks here, and that's why we wanted to make sure that we got that 5% raise. But, you know, that's government's responsibility to be good stewards of the tax dollars. I mean, everything that we collect from property tax to EDIT to COIT to people that pay user fees for water and wastewater, all the money we bring in is somebody else paying it to us, and we need to be good stewards of that, and I've never lost sight of that in the 18 years that I've been in office, and we're going to continue to work that way. But you do get to a point, as I've told people who asked about it, where another body is absolutely warranted. You've got to that place now where you just have to do that, and when we get to that point, We do it, and like I said, I'll evaluate those independently as we move forward here, and make sure we have the personnel that we need, but that we're not overstaffed either, and that we're got that number just right.
So we've talked on the show before about the state's READY program. Grant proposals were due into the state at the end of last month, and this is a program that's going to provide money that helps fund different initiatives related to quality of life, attracting a workforce, and different areas across the state kind of organized themselves into regions, came together to make their proposals. So taking a look at the proposal from our neck of the woods, so Lafayette is in a group that includes West Lafayette and Tippecanoe County, but also includes Benton County, Carroll County, Fountain County, Warren County, White County, cities within those counties. Obviously, it includes Purdue, Ivy Tech. There are some large-scale projects proposed here, really big ideas. Looking at this list, I guess first of all, and this is a kind of a two-part question, you know, what do you think is the most important proposal for Lafayette? But also, what's the most realistic, the thing that's likeliest to happen if you had to look at this?
Okay. Well, we could probably have about a four-hour discussion on that, so I'll try to hone that in just a little bit to talk a little bit about the process and then the projects, but also, you know, to make sure that your listeners know that, you know, we've submitted. There is no guarantee. It's going to be up to $50 million, and certainly there is no guarantee that we will get those monies. I feel like we have a good opportunity, and I feel like we have put together a very good proposal. And, you know, we had to bring, as you indicated, a lot of people together. So the idea behind this was the state that regions would work together on economic development, quality of life, talent attraction, those types of things that could improve the quality of life for those regions and economics, and then in turn improve the whole state of Indiana, but that they were also put together in a way that they would be sustainable, that, you know, after the grant was done, you would have structured this in a way that you could continue to collaborate, you could continue to build partnerships, you know, after the $50 million was gone, because as much as $50 million is, it's still not a huge amount when you're thinking of a multi-county region and you think about the city of Lafayette's budget for 1 year, and not counting wastewater, water, or redevelopment, just the regular civil budget will be about, you know, $72 or $73 million just for 1 year. So we really did need to bring people together because there's a governance board structure. There are certain milestones that you have to meet along the way when it comes to collaboration, and lots of votes. All those projects that you saw had to be scored by the governance committee that's in place right now, and then submitted, and then there'll have to be figured out ways of implementation going forward. So we literally met for months with people from our county and the other counties trying to put together a proposal, trying to get a group. And what would our group be? Originally, we discussed also with Clinton County, and we discussed with Montgomery County. Montgomery County decided to go south with, I think, Boone and some counties to the south. And Clinton County went to the Kokomo area. And so this group that we settled on now is the group that is our regional economic group that we'll be working with if we're, you know, fortunate enough to achieve those monies. And that's going to be really, really important, because I can tell you the smaller communities were really concerned about, you know, making sure that they got their fair share of the funding, and that the projects that we do and that we finalize, you know, benefit everybody, and that everybody does get a chance to win from this, and that it is sustainable. And so, like you said, there are some giant projects in there that Purdue submitted and that, you know, that they're working on that would be certainly wins for the community. They take up a substantial substantial amount of that money, and so we're going to have to be very careful, and we have committed to the other organizations that, you know, this is going to be done in a fair way. They're going to have the same votes and the same ability to weigh in on these. And so as we've moved through the process, you know, there are everything on there from big economic development projects down to trail projects, right? Trails that would connect many of our communities, and actually have a lot of the planning and for some of those things have been done through the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation and through the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network grant that they gave to REC. So between the two of them, a lot of the work has been done on that. And so, we've submitted some things for Lafayette for continued downtown development along the riverfront, because we do feel that riverfront still is an untapped amenity where, you know, we've built the promenade, we have plans, but we need to keep pushing them out to link Lafayette and West Lafayette and Purdue University. You've heard John and I talk about that before, creating this downtown between the two cities that feel like you're really in a much larger downtown than what the two cities could do on their own, and lots of things to do. But at the end of the night, you go back, you know, to two smaller communities that you can really enjoy. And the next day you can be at work in 10 or 15 minutes without a long commute. And so we've submitted things down along the river. Certainly the discussion about the semiconductor project and, right. and how do we look at this community. Obviously for me, that's a very exciting, because so many communities here locally are directly affected by that. And so many people that work in the other counties come into Lafayette to work every day at the plants and the businesses that are greatly affected by that chip situation. So that really does impact a lot of people and a lot of people's jobs and how much income they have. So, you know, I think what I'm most excited about, though, to be honest with you, is the fact that we are right now, we were able to pull a multi-group of people together. We were able to go through the scoring and the grading process. We have open discussions that were not always easy to have. There were a lot of different points of view, a lot of position, people with different positions that they felt were important. And so, but I'm pleased at the end of the day, everybody's come to the table. They're working very hard to be collaborative. They're working very hard to find solutions. I talked to the governor about that yesterday for a while we were at the SOB event. Mm-hmm. Him and I talked about the READY program and our READY proposal, and I told him some of the things that we'd been able to get done and brought people together, and we had a good conversation about that. So I think that's what I'm most pleased about, because I can tell you from a personal standpoint, I want the whole region to succeed. I want Carroll County to succeed, Delphi, Benton County, White County, Montes. I want those counties and those other communities to succeed. When our region succeeds, we all do succeed. And so this is an important project for all of us.
That is our time for today. Mayor Wisworski, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Emily.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.